Call the hearing to order. We're now day 20, and save for one stray submission that still has to be addressed, this is our last day of hearing. We're here initially for Willow Ridge Developments Limited. So, Mr. Gress?
Yes, thank you, Commissioner. We are just waiting on Ms. Costello, who should be here in a moment.
Understand. We'll welcome her when she arrives.
Yes. Yeah. So we filed some submissions essentially just summarising where we're now at as far as between the submitter and the council, and essentially the issues from the time of the submission and the council's Section 42A report have narrowed really to three main issues. One of them is the issue of the residential zonings. There's medium density residential sought by the submitter to the east of Sir Tim Wallace Drive and high density residential zoning to the west. The other issue is the fixed road connection from Ballantyne Road, which is sought by Willow Ridge to be from the intersection of Ballantyne and Golf Course Road. Mr. Facey is here too, and has filed evidence in respect of his position as to the location of that road, and Ms. Costello as well has filed evidence which she will speak to, and she has also prepared a summary which she will provide to you. Those are the main issues as far as, as between the council and the submitter.
I thought you said there were three issues.
Sorry, I do. There was one in relation to the building restriction area, which there's one to the north of Sir Tim Wallace Drive, and one to the west, adjoining the golf course. But I believe I understand from Mr. Roberts's summary evidence is that he's happy with the amendments to that BRA to the north.
I think there was an issue we picked up. The text said he was happy, but he hadn't changed the map.
Correct. The issue from, yeah.
But the message we got was that he agreed with the submission, just hadn't translated that onto his map.
Yes. Yes, those are the issues as between the council and the submitter. Obviously, there are a number of other issues as far as the rezoning that's been sought that have been agreed between the respective planners, and happy to address any of those points or those three that I've just outlined.
And we also have Ms. Devlin to talk about.
Yes, so that's the second submission, Commissioner, in relation to the industrial zoning of the Ballantyne Road site, which she has filed evidence in respect of and will be speaking to. And the outstanding issue as far as that submission is the area of land between the low-density residential three parks and the balance of the industrial zoning of that site, and whether that area should be retained as notified industrial zone or rezoned low-density residential.
Thank you, Mr. Grierson. I only had one question arising out of your submissions that relates to your reference at paragraph 10 of your submissions to objective 3 of the new NPS urban development.
Yes.
And you said, well, Mr. Roberts' position isn't consistent with that. So I want to talk about your interpretation of that clause, that objective. It says plans, regional policy statements and plans, enable more people to live in and do this, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And the question is, more than what and how much more? How do you interpret the word more in that context?
Well, I think you interpret it in the context of those matters that apply or enable those more people to live. So if you are greater enabling C, essentially. So if you have more employment opportunities.
No, that's where you have more, but the question is how much more and more than what? Like, is this 40-storey Hong Kong apartment buildings?
I think it still comes back to the context of how many is appropriate in the context of that particular area of land. I mean, if you're enabling more people to live in an area where those matters apply, then you're meeting you're meeting those matters, and I think it still does come down to those matters, because if you are creating more employment opportunities, then that greater enables you to have more people living in those areas, or there's more reason to have more people living in those areas.
Well, let's say,
is that your point essentially? Is that those are the reasons for having more, rather than
telling you how
telling
much
you
more?
How much more? Yeah, it's an interesting question. I mean. Yeah, it comes down to a question of degree, essentially.
And if... So I could understand if your submission was saying that your position is more in line... too many mores, but, you know... more in line with the objective, but I don't know whether you can draw a hard line and say... Well, you could probably say if it was being zoned low-density residential, that's not more, but... Once you get above that, as you say, it's an issue of degree.
Mm.
And so as I say, like I could understand if you were saying your position is more in line with the NPS than Mr. Roberts, but I don't know if you can say that his is definitely inconsistent with the NPS and yours is consistent. But so...
No, I wouldn't.
Do you think you?
I wouldn't say his is inconsistent. I think the point that was being made, and I understand Mr. Roberts' issue was in relation to the fact that area that's sought to be high density residential is certainly not adjoining to, and it's a question of how far away it is from the Wanaka town centre. And the point that was being made as far as Willow Ridge is concerned is that, yes, it's not a town centre, but it is an area, Three Parks in the area is an area that does have employment opportunities, which justifies, again, coming back to that question of degree, more people or more residential capacity in that adjoining area.
Thank you. Commissioners, any questions for Mr. Grierson?
Thank you. Anything to add?
No, thanks.
Well, where do you propose to start?
I think Mr. Colgrave is, if he's online and ready to go.
Certainly. Welcome, Mr. Colgrave.
Good morning.
Once again.
Hello.
You have the floor. What would you like to ask?
I haven't prepared a summary as such because it's a fairly short brief evidence tonight, and I'm aware that you've read it and you've already digested a lot of other material, so I thought if we'd just go straight to questions if that works for you.
Very happy to do that. Commissioner Smith.
Thank you. Thank you for your evidence. I'm just interested in... whether you've had any look at, I suppose, the demand or economic demand for high density residential, whether you've got any comment on that, the economic impacts and what the opportunities are for high density residential in Wanaka.
Yeah, I hadn't turned my attention to that in any detail for this brief evidence, but I certainly believe that there will be a greater demand for high-density residential over time, not just in Wanaka, but certainly generally. certainly the experience that I'm seeing in the areas I'm working is quite a significant shift to much higher density residential and more areas, particularly areas where district plans are allowing occur. Having said that, I don't think there'll be a huge amount of residential demand just yet. I think that's likely to come in some of the later stages of the development, once some of the more sort of commercial areas are developed and creates more draw power. But I certainly believe that over the longer term, there'll be a lot of demand for medium and high density residential in three parks and in Wanaka generally.
And so, by its very nature, high density accommodates more people than medium density or low density. So if you cast your mind to the demand in terms of the proportion of the zoning at all, the proportion of high density versus other things and the amount of residential demand that accommodates?
I haven't turned my attention to that for this brief of evidence or in generally really, but my understanding is there's certainly more low-density residential enabled across the zone than the higher ones, but perhaps that will change over time, I'm not sure.
Yeah, thank you. I suppose I was more interested in the number of people that the zonings accommodate versus the land proportion that they take up, but I appreciate you haven't given specific...
Sorry, I didn't quite catch that.
I said that I was... more interested in the number of people that those proportions would accommodate versus the relative land areas that they take up. But,
right, no, I haven't looked at that, sorry.
Okay, thank you.
Commissioner Dawson.
No questions, thank you.
Commissioner Munro. Thank
you. Mr. Colgrove, I just want to ask you a question about the proposed Three Parks business zone that was put forward by the council staff as a response to the submitter's concerns with the general industrial zone, and I've read with interest your evidence going through the proposed Three Parks business zone with the general industrial zone. Yes. To the extent that you're able, and acknowledging that you've properly focused yourself to your client's land, we've received submissions from across the district relating to the general industrial zoned land with concerns quite similar to those expressed by Willowridge. So my question to you is, the Three Parks business zone as proposed by the staff, do you think that's something that is for some reason limited in appropriateness to the Three Parks area, or do you think it could be applied elsewhere in the district where similar concerns with the general industrial zone have been identified?
It's a great question. I would probably benefit from knowing a bit more about where those areas are and what the characteristics are. But I guess one of the defining features that does make Three Parks potentially different is the land that's mostly zoned as GIZ. My understanding is most of that is already developed or consented for development, and 80% of those uses are non-complying or prohibited in the GIZ zone. So I guess immediately there's a disconnect there between that proposed zoning and what's happening on the ground.
Yeah, just to give you some help there, Mr. Colgrove, that's the issue that's been raised in some other submissions where the land's already been developed to activities that would become non-compliant or prohibited.
Mm. Yeah, okay. Well, I certainly think in those cases there's a lot of merit in considering a more enabling zoning, particularly one that reflects what's happening on the ground. I mean, there's a potential issue, I guess, where if an existing tenant who had existing use rights was to vacate the site and a similar activity wished to move in, if existing rights weren't conveyed to that new use, whether they'd even be allowed to establish. And so I guess my preference would certainly be that whatever zoning prevails is an accurate reflection of what's existing.
Okay, thank you for that. That's all.
Mr. Colgrove, I wanted to ask you about the footnote on page 10 of your evidence, where you're essentially saying that the loss of or rezoning of land known zoned industrial is not material because there's lots of
GIZ land available. As the Commissioner Munro has observed, there are lots of people seeking to rezone currently GIZ land, and they're all saying, well, if we chip my bit off, there's plenty there, and it won't be a problem. And no one yet has looked at the big picture and saying, well, if all of these submissions were granted, where would we be relative to demand? Have you done that?
I haven't looked at the wider effects, and I presume we're obviously talking about cumulative effects here of sort of death by a thousand cuts. And I acknowledge that that's certainly an issue for zoning generally, but again, I think for the land in question, which is all I've really considered, that land is essentially consented or developed. So Laws is kind of bolted in terms of that being available for future general industrial uses, I believe. But I acknowledge your point more generally across other areas.
Paragraph 34 of your evidence, you've treated the, you've amalgamated the amount of commercial core land. Have you broken that down in your own workings as to the land? Is it east and west of, well, I won't talk about compass, I'll say either side of Sir Tim Wallace Drive?
No, I haven't, sorry, I've just looked at it in aggregate.
The other next question I had was about paragraph 40. You're talking about adopting a circular shape to encourage support walkability. Given the focus of the Three Parks Commercial Area on big box retail, do you think walkability is so much of an issue for this commercial area?
Yes, I think so. Certainly, I know when I and people I know visit a large format retail area, a big box retail area, you're not always buying a fridge, you're not always buying a stove, you're often buying smaller things that are easily carried, and quite often people will go and purchase nothing simply because they want to go and have a look and see what's available and do those comparisons before they make a decision. So I think walkability is very important for those areas, just the same way it is for more fine-grained retail.
Well, so essentially your point is the box might be big, but what's in the box might not necessarily.
Well, that's often a whole new trick of its own, but I think there's a very large proportion of people that go to those areas and don't always buy something they can't carry themselves.
Thank you, Mr. Hill.
Nothing further for me.
Mr.
Cloud? Yeah, morning, Mr. Colgrave.
Morning.
The last time you appeared before us, the chair on your evidence, you did a lovely array of Manhattans, and the chair asked you what would happen in 2020 and how is that column looking, and I was more concerned about 2026.
Mm-hmm.
Given what's happened in the recent days, how is that column shrinking?
Well, I don't think we're about to reopen the borders in any event, so I think it's probably not going to make too much difference in the short term, but certainly if we can't make this thing go away quickly, it could be even worse than my highly accurate prediction from previous months.
And just extending the jizz conversation with you point out there's very little, if any, vacant jizz land, or general industrial zone land, in the PDP zoning in this location, have we lost more than is appropriate? Or with the addition of the land south of the proposed sports fields at 101, does that balance secure us moving forward?
Well, Well, I think that the Willow Ridge submission seeks to extend their proposed business zoning onto some of the residential. So overall, we're going to have more land that will accommodate trade supply, industrial, and so on. So while other activities can go there as well, I think their proposal overall enables more business land on three parks than the ODP or the PDP.
And we had a group presented yesterday that were concerned about similar issues for Willow Ridge, which is that extension of the business mixed-use commercial style over industrial. I asked them the question, if the GIZ isn't here, where is it? And here was, and if I can get you to pull out your economic crystal ball and look to the future, if here isn't contained by the rivers, the Cadrona and the Clutha, where is the GIZ? Have you turned your mind to that, or?
No, I haven't, sorry. I've only really thought about these things in the context of three parks land, but I think we probably also need to cast the net a little bit wider and consider Central Otago and Cromwell and some of those other locations. I know certainly in Queenstown, some of those activities have decamped Cromwell and are quite happily operating from there. I'm not suggesting that everyone should leave the district from being Cromwell, but you know, there certainly are other opportunities. And again, while these proposed zonings allow industrial and other activities, there's a temptation, I think, to assume that industrial will be supplanted by these slightly higher value uses, but I'm not sure that's always going to be the case. And there is a demand for industrial activities to occur in and around Wanaka. They'll find a location to make it work, whether it be at three parks or somewhere else.
And it was just with half a nod to the NPS on urban development, obviously. And it's interesting to hear you talk and bring Cromwell into the mix. One final question, if I may, and I'm just going to check that this is actually a final question. The commercial zone that you've gone from 16, we lost a bit, got to 11, and then the submission takes us back to 18. Two within there is a supplementary. Is that an impact that's going to impact on town centre and or the Plantation Road mixed-use zone? And when that commercial zone is applied, it seems to go over the business mixed-use that's either side of Sir Tim Willis Drive. Which reigns out of that? Those two...
Yeah, so I mean, it's certain that the drawings and my evidence where I sort of characterise those three areas, I think I footnoted that some of them do include land that's not strictly commercial core, but I sort of treat them as effectively the commercial core. So I think that just...
So the drawing is more indicative than determinative?
Yes, yeah, I think I do make the point that underlying some bits of it are the mainstream stuff. Putting that to one side, I think so we're going from 16 to 17.9 hectares, about a 12% increase. I don't believe it's a massively significant change, and I think the important thing is that these things are a very slow burn, very long-term development, so I wouldn't expect to see this land fully developed for, say, 20 to 30 years. You know, certainly looking at the rate at which things have developed historically and how they're likely to go forward, I don't think that having an additional 1.9 hectares is going to have a significant impact on the sort of overall role and function of the area over the long term. And I think the other thing is that, as I pointed out previously, the town centre fulfills a slightly different role and function to the future role and function of three parks, with one being more visitor focused, the other being more residential in terms of serving residents. And I think that they're largely complementary, and that, you know, the town centre is anchored by its proximity to the lake and its unique mix of tourist facing activities and all those sorts of things. And you know, every time I've surveyed the town centre, there's never been any vacancies of any kind. So while three parks will certainly grow and become a bigger node in the future, I don't really expect that to have a significant impact on the long run.
Well, thank you very much, Mr. Colgrave, and let's hope that the next time you survey the town centre, it's still fully occupied.
I hope so.
Thank you for your
Thank
time.
Thank you.
I think that's time for Mr. Colgrave to sign off.
Thank you, Commissioners. Next call, Mr. Facey.
straight to questions?
Yes, Mr. Dibley has prepared a summary. He's happy to speak to his primary representative. Yeah.
That's fine. Commissioner Smith, like to start.
Yeah, thank you, and thank you for your evidence. I'm primarily concerned with the transport network, I suppose, and this, and how that relates to the structure plans. That figure one in your evidence provides a structure plan from the previous three park special zone.
Mm-hmm.
Under that structure plan, there's a number of different, there's a hierarchy of needs, I suppose, that there's sort of a primary network of roads, and there's also some intersections identified as road fixed connection points, which seem to be quite specific. It says a variation of 20 metres, so that you say this is where we need the road, but we can go a little bit here, subject to design. And then there's an indicative point where a broader one, which they say, well, clearly there needs to be a connection through here, but we don't really care where it is. Now, if we go on to the structure plan that is proposed to be carried forward into the three parks provisions, or into the new provisions, we only seem to have carried through the primary road network, which is really just Timorless Drive and two other roads. I suppose just interested to know your view from a transport perspective, whether those other fixed connection points and certainly some of the secondary network are important to the integrated connectivity.
The non-fixed points, I didn't see them as particularly important. But the critical thing is getting your main roads through there sorted out so that you have something that you can build off. the rest of them develop over time. I feel that if the secondary network is developed over time as you understand more the layout of your intersections and your spatial requirements within the development. Going too far into the nuts and bolts of the development perhaps at this stage I think is a bit risky. We don't know how it will finally develop. There may be different ways of developing that come up over time that are better for the development than what was initially envisaged. So I think keeping it flexible and dealing with the internal roading issues through resource consent at the time when we know what we're looking at is probably the safer way of doing it.
So given that Tim Wallace Drive, and I mean you referred to that the secondary or indicative points are not as important, but I suppose ironically the Ballantyne Road, Tim Wallace Drive one was one of those, and clearly that was quite important. I'm just looking at the other, and to look at two specific examples, I suppose, is one. One is on Riverbank Road, there's two connection points. One closer to the south, which would effectively be along the back of what's proposed to be an active sport and recreation zone. And the second is further up, which is still part of the proposed structure plan.
Mm.
Looking at that southern one, is that one still not a critical network connection?
I couldn't comment on that.
Couldn't comment.
No, it's just not something that we've really looked at in detail at this stage.
Okay.
The main issues for the new ODP are the main roads, and they would become critical. Critical locations, two of which have already been formed.
Yeah.
The other two, one is what we're talking about today, the Riverbank Road one would be critical. Secondary onto Riverbank Road depends where the development suits really.
Okay. And looking, the secondary one that I'm interested in is Gordon Road. That the one that's opposite Gordon Road, crossing Ballantyne Road, and you know we discussed yesterday with another expert the you can certainly could you envisage that people in Alpine Estates or Bright Sky or certainly in other parts of Gordon Road or even the other side of Cudred Valley Road and would want to come through there and come towards the school, would it be appropriate from a design, from a traffic point of view, to have a inline intersection there that actually takes people from Gordon Road directly into Three Parks, or to have them dogleg back into Tim Wallace Drive?
Typically, crossroad intersections are discouraged. People are trying to move away from them towards T intersections, which are a lot less complex. Fewer decisions need to be made by drivers, so they tend to be safer. There's also, you can get more capacity out of a series of T intersections. So turning right out of Gordon Road, then left onto Sir Tim Wallace is probably probably a lot easier for most drivers than going straight across.
And are you familiar with the network operating framework or the Wanaka Transport Program business case?
The one written by GHD in 2017?
I can't confirm that reference size. But
yeah, it was written.
Yeah.
This one?
Yeah. So you're familiar with those?
Yeah.
Okay. Are there any aspects arising from those strategic transport documents that we should be integrating into the structure plans for Three Parks?
Well, the main thing is the location of the roads that they were proposing in the structure plan, in the network plan that GHD produced, and on which the modelling has been based, which showed a road intersection from Golf Course Road through basically where the Figure 2 roading plan is shown. So you know, the proposed structure plan in Figure 2 is based largely on what was previously produced by the council.
Okay, I think that's all, thank you.
Commissioner Dawson?
You'll probably get more questions on this, but I'll start the ball rolling on the intersection up at Golf Course Road, which Mr. Smith and Mr. Rossiter have raised concerns about not really knowing whether it's going to work or not. And if to show a road on a structure plan, especially a fixed road like this, one of the key roads, it normally assumes that it can happen, and that it can happen safely and practically, and the land's available, and that there's not going to be any hiccups with it. Now you haven't provided any sort of draft design or a layout particularly of that intersection. If additional land that's not owned by Willeridge happens to be needed, which Mr. Smith and Mr. Rossiter think could well be, we can't be sure at this stage that it can be designed properly or created properly. So how can we be assured of that at this stage in order to show it on a structure plan?
The main issue was the site distances because it's on the brow of a hill.
Yes.
And there's two plans at the back that show the long sections along Ballantyne Road, which demonstrate that it is actually going to provide sufficient site distance along Ballantyne Road to be able to produce a roundabout. And if we need more site distance, we just go a little bit deeper. It's almost there now in terms of site distances. So it's actually surprisingly good as a roundabout location. The bigger issue is the geometric design, the horizontal design of it, and that can be accommodated within the road reserves that we have at the moment. Golf course road's about 40 metres road reserve, so there's plenty of room to relocate that slightly towards the intersection, and we can get a pretty reasonable crossroad roundabout design with four legs in there. It's actually surprisingly not so bad.
So we just have to take your word for it. I mean, this is quite a significant change to the planning structure to move the second major road through that area.
Mm.
So really your verbal answer to us now is what's before us.
Well, there is clearly enough room in there. There is also discussions about potentially taking additional land for it. I know part of the road is actually on the property on the corner already, so that will need to be dealt with. But there is sufficient room at the moment in Ballantyne Road in the corridor we have, which is quite unusual in its shape, that does allow us to put in a roundabout. I have been looking at it, and you can put in something that's reasonably good, bearing in mind also that the speed limit there will be reduced to 40 kilometres an hour by the end of the year, I would expect.
You're just expecting that?
Well, no, it's out to tender at the moment.
Okay.
So the intention is that the tender will be awarded in September, depending on lockdown levels, I guess by the end of the year they should have completed all their signs. The bylaw's already in place.
To change the speed limit?
Yeah. So a roundabout at this location would actually support the speed limit, because the speed limit changes, the change of speed limit Ballantyne south of the existing speed limit, which is about within 100 metres of Golf Course Road, that's going to remain at 50 north of that point through Golf Course Road. It will be reduced to 40.
Through the intersection?
Yeah. And Golf Course Road remains at 70.
All right, well, you'll probably get some more questions about this anyway. Thank you.
Commissioner Munro.
Thank you. I understood your answer to Commissioner Smith earlier to be that T-intersections are generally safer than a crossroads.
Generally.
Is that one T-intersection versus one crossroads, or two T-intersections versus one crossroads to account for the total number of movements?
It's several T-intersections.
Okay.
Would be safer than a single crossroad.
So if the existing structure plan has a proposed key road T-intersection out of the three-part zone with Ballantyne Road, and then about 300 metres up the road, the existing golf course road, Ballantyne T-intersection, is that safer than the proposed crossroads?
If the crossroads is controlled by a roundabout, it will be safer than probably a T-intersection.
Okay. But your evidence is that the roundabout might not be required for some time, presumably at someone else's cost.
My suspicion is that you could put in a crossroads that would function adequately for some time. But with growth in the area, I don't think it would be for a very long time.
I'm trying to understand, and I can't find it in the evidence, how the proposed change would be better than the current structure plan. Your evidence focuses on whether or not the new intersection can be achieved, and there's no criticism of that. But I'm still a step behind saying, what is the argument to actually make the change? So do you have any traffic engineering reasons you could help?
Yeah, we would be able to create a roundabout at the Golf Course Road intersection, which is, as I say, better than probably a T-intersection at the substation area. And it would also very much support the speed limit, the change in speed limit from 40 to 50. So a roundabout there would be actually quite good from a network point of view.
If we were to be persuaded by your judgment on a roundabout. If we were to agree to repositioning the road, wouldn't it be prudent to simply require the roundabout as well from day one?
I think they would be happy with that, I think, yeah.
What was the answer to that, sorry?
Yes, yes. I think a roundabout would make more sense than a crossroads for a short period. That's why I gave both, but I was always expecting that we'd go straight to a roundabout.
I appreciate it. Thank you for your answers.
On the issue of speed, what's the sensitivity of your calculations to that change from 40 to 50 kph?
The speed that I've assumed for the vertical design was that there'd be a speed limit of 40, and you design it for, if you don't have a speed profile, and obviously with the new speed limit we don't have a speed profile, you design for 10 kilometres over the speed limit as the 85th percentile. So I've designed the vertical alignment at 50.
So you built in the... Does that mean that if it stayed at 50, you'd build in... You'd design for 60?
Yeah.
And what are the implications of that difference?
You just need... you'd need a slightly larger vertical curve radius, which... we could achieve quite easily by just going a little bit deeper. The amount of excavation needed to achieve, based on the LIDAR data that you've got, the amount of excavation required is minimal to achieve a vertical design of 50 kilometres an hour.
And that could all be done within the existing road reserve.
Yes.
The other question, I asked Mr. Roster, was about the golfers going from one half of the course over the road to the other half in close proximity to the roundabout you're hypothesising. I'm not sure how far up the road it is. I could just remember crossing that road myself when I played golf there. Do you think that's an issue?
It's an issue that would need to be considered, yes. At the moment it seems to work quite well. There's reasonable visibility. As I say, it's a lot better when you actually stand there and look at it than when you're driving through. So from a pedestrian's point of view, it's not too bad, but there are options. There could be overpasses, potentially underpasses. Although, it would need to be considered in light of the actual design that we come up with. Particularly in a 40 kilometre an hour speed area.
Mr. McLeod.
Yeah, thank you very much, Mr. Fessy. I'd love to kick off starting about that particular intersection that we all know and love, and I'm gratified to hear you say that a roundabout from day one, because Alan and I discussed a roundabout on State Highway 84, and I got the flariest letter I've ever gotten. I'm keen to avoid that again, but that roundabout, if you look at the interaction with that roundabout, supposing this all were turn our mind to including that as a potential option, the interaction with those golfers is quite critical to my mind. So in your professional opinion, would you be recommending something like an overpass? Instead of need to be considered, wouldn't that be an integral part, or would that be an integral part, in your professional opinion? An overpass, an underpass, some sort of treatment?
It's a low-speed environment. Potentially, you could do something at grade as well. So, median island, a pedestrian refuge. It could be done, but people pulling a golf cart, it's probably a little bit more difficult to design in. So I would imagine that we'd be looking at something like an overpass, but I'd like to keep some flexibility on that until we actually see what it does look like
in
the design.
Just again, turning your mind to my knowledge of that intersection, because you're rising up from both sides.
Yeah.
So do the sight lines still apply? I'm not a technical expert, and you are. Would that have an influence?
As I say, we would be achieving the required approach sight distances from Austroads for a roundabout with very little excavation required. So the sight lines are pretty much already there. It hasn't shown up as a problem for the golfers crossing the road. They seem to be able to do it quite safely and easily. The main problem will be with the increasing traffic volumes, and I suspect that might be probably the bigger thing that would require a overpass than the actual movement of the traffic through there.
So, and the increase of traffic volumes being that this is a more attractive option to access three parks or the school or the sports centre?
Ballantyne Road itself is just growing down that end. We're at the moment at about 9,500 vehicles a day. I would imagine that you'd want to get an overpass in at some point, certainly around no more than 15,000, you'd be expecting an overpass or some sort of facility. But just general traffic growth is probably going to be a bigger issue than a roundabout being there.
And just to confirm that the... I'm aware that the speed limits are changing on Ballantyne Road, and the other side of Ballantyne Road and the internal roading from Three Parks, should this go ahead, that'll all be a 40k environment approaching the roundabout?
Yeah. Not Golf Course Road, though, that's still 70 at this stage.
At this stage, but there'll be a transition to the roundabout, will it?
Well, the current, I think it's fairly close to the roundabout where they're putting the 40k speed limit change in. But that's going to happen anyway. If it's a T intersection or a roundabout, it's still going to be, it'll be what it is.
I'm just assuming that if we did, we'd go to the roundabout.
It will be 40 at the roundabout itself, but there's how far along Golf Course Road they make the 40, I don't know.
Road connection to Riverbank Road on the east, again, that meets the, because I didn't see any evidence about that meeting the sight lines when you, as you come around that corner, drop down to that intersection next to the, what is the Project Pure pump station?
Yeah, I didn't look at that in detail.
You didn't look at it?
No.
Right. So that will be addressed through the process?
Through the resource consenting
process.
Resource
consenting, it will. All from me, sir.
Mr. Hill.
Thank you. I was just reading Mr. Smith, Mr. Rossiter's rebuttal evidence. Go to the roundabout. And he finally comes to the view that he says there's insufficient information for him to make a different recommendation. And it seems to me that was an invite to provide more information. I wonder, have you had any discussions with Mr. Smith or Mr. Rossiter?
No.
Would that have been helpful? I mean, you know the way this process works, so the council gets to put in a reply, and I imagine, this is really following on Commissioner Dawes's point, I imagine what will come back in the reply is there is nothing further that he's been given and his recommendation will be the same, so we end up with a contest. So I wonder whether there was an opportunity for you to have a discussion, I don't know, within the constraints of what your clients ask you to do, whether an indicative design would persuade him.
Well, from what I understood, the only issue that they had from reading their evidence was that they weren't sure about the sight distances, which is the
very so again. Okay.
From what I understood, their concerns were around the sight distances, which are addressed by the vertical design, the vertical curve design, The LiDAR data indicates that site distances, the approach site distances in particular, on a roundabout are the critical ones, and they can be achieved on the Ballantyne Road approaches. On the other two approaches, they're pretty well flat, so they can be easily achieved. And Golf Course Road, a little bit of excavation, it'll be there too.
I mean, I accept that's what you're saying, but are you implying that council engineers have an entrenched view and there's no advantage in discussing it any further with them?
No, I thought it was that was the only issue that they had, was that they didn't think that there was sufficient site distance. And this demonstrates that there is.
Yes.
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
So are you expecting them to listen to the audio recording of today in order for them to understand what you've said?
No, I'm expecting them to look at the LiDAR data in the back of this report.
But they had that before they wrote their rebuttal.
I hadn't seen a rebuttal.
You haven't seen their rebuttal?
I wasn't aware they had.
Smith's rebuttal. Mr. Smith's rebuttal.
Mr. Smith's rebuttal, which then Mr. Rossiter picked up at the hearing. I mean,
so
Commissioner Hill said, I don't think they changed their view, having seen your evidence.
Oh, okay, I wasn't aware of that.
So, well,
just so you know, the rebuttal.
I think that what the commissioners are saying is that the panel would be appreciated would appreciate it if you could at least extend communication to Mr. Roster and see if you can work through, as between you, what the issues are. I'm not directing that you conference in a formal sense. The council will continue to have the last word, but it won't be very helpful if the council's last word is nothing's changed and we haven't changed our opinion and we have a conflict of views and no resolution. So I'll just leave that with you. I think Commissioner Munro, you had a question. Was that it?
Thanks, Eric. Thank you.
Listening to the discussion, it brought back to my mind a frustration from reading the evidence, not with you or the request, but the issue. And the issue is the conundrum of a district plan trying to predict the subdivision or even engineering works level of detail around can you do this, can you not? And we're effectively being asked to pick a winner between people's assurances of what they think might happen. As I understand the evidence, there's no fundamental defect with the current structure plan location with Ballantyne Road, and in terms of the proposed intersection with Golf Course Road, I don't think the council's expressed any fundamental opposition. It's a question of deliverability and certainty and what have you. What I'm interested in understanding are your thoughts on a middle ground where the structure plan might show the fixed. No, I'll take a step back. My understanding of the importance of showing this particular road on the structure plan is from the point of view of a transport network showing a collector road through. I haven't seen anything suggesting one way or the other its particular alignment within the three-park zone as having any fundamental role to play, and I read the structure plan as saying it's the collector roads as a network that's important, detail of other roads come later. Is that how you see it?
Yeah.
So is there an option where, looking at this particular link, the structure plan might show the fixed connection point as it currently does on Sir Tim Wallace Drive, that then has a western orientation for about 150 metres, but from that point could the structure plan show both
his options
and just say there must be at least one of them, and as you say, the subdivision process has to roll through its incredibly detailed, focused consideration of both options and horizontal and vertical splits and costs and who does what, and as long as one of them gets delivered and we're hearing that either could be okay, would that be a satisfactory way forward? Do we absolutely have to pick the winner here? with no real information to do so?
I don't see why we...
I can ask Mr. Dippy for his view later on. What's your view?
From a technical point of view, either if we have two options, I would be comfortable with that myself, but...
Well, that's the question.
As long as we have options that we can work with.
I think the critical issue would be certainty that there would be at least one of them to achieve that connector-collector link. That seems to be the key issue. No one wants to show two indicative roads and then neither of them happen. But let's assume there was a way that could be assured, and it creates a process through subdivision for whatever the right answer is to be found.
Yeah, that would suit me, as long as we didn't need both, one or the other, as long as it was clear that either would be that
why not
either
both?
Would be an option.
Why not both? Although maybe only one collector.
Yeah, the second one would be potentially redundant as a collector, because the collectors also talk about things like public transport networks.
Because do you anticipate local roads might also connect to Ballantyne Road, or only that one collector along that length from Sir Tim Wallace Drive all the way to Golf Course Road?
We don't need it. Potentially these collectors could take the bulk of the traffic from that's created internally, so there possibly need not be additional connections, but it would be worth retaining the option to have that if the...
Well,
if
we entertain this,
it
would be unfortunate if we unintentionally said there can only ever be one road connection whatsoever along there if that's not actually the intention. If the intention is one collector road, then that's something that could be clearly specified. Okay. Look, thanks for that additional...
Yeah. One additional collector road.
There's
more
point of clarification.
One at a time.
One small point of clarification is you mentioned 15,000 as a number. This is with regard to the overpass.
Yeah.
Is that vehicles per day from a 7-day traffic count?
It's that would be a principled approach. Again, you'd look at the detail of what you had at the time. It may be less, it may be more.
Commissioner Smith, you had a follow up?
Yeah, thank you. I'll try and make it brief. You made the comment earlier that a T intersection was preferable, but then you went on to say that a roundabout is even more preferable to either a T intersection or a cross intersection. Is that correct?
Well, when a T intersection becomes too busy, there is very little option. Anything at the higher levels will start to fail, and then you look at the options.
So if we were to go back to that idea potentially that a road, a T intersection of some sort lined, a crossroads of some sort aligned with Gordon Road, would a roundabout be appropriate in that location to provide another option for cross town connectivity?
If it was necessary that there be a cross town connection through there, a roundabout would probably be a better option than a crossroads.
Okay. And I don't quite understand your point as to why you suggested only one entry into three parks would be helpful. Wouldn't spreading the load across multiple options be beneficial if we had not just one, but two or more entry points?
Well, there's always going to be frontage properties which will have entries. But if you have too many, you wind up spreading things along Ballantyne Road too much. Along Ballantyne Road, you probably want to concentrate at as few actual entry points as you can. The more intersections you get, the more potential there is for safety issues. So you want to minimise those if you can. Concentrate them around more major, well-designed, high-capacity intersections.
Yeah. And wouldn't a roundabout at opposite Gordon Road provide a well-designed, integrated entry point?
If it works with the rest of the network.
Okay. Thank you. And
it probably would.
Just one final question. Are you comfortable that in modelling your traffic movements that you've taken into the full account of the potential demand created by the high-density residential proposed zones?
High-density residential is... it generates less traffic than medium low density. Although there's more people, they tend to have fewer vehicles and they rely more on walking, cycling, public transport. So potentially it's probably, it may not be that much different to having the alternative types of residential. So it potentially could be not a lot different. We also don't have any certainty at this stage as to what sort of development will be permitted. So I think, yeah, according to the 2045 traffic model that was provided to us, we have quite a number of vehicles, 650 in the peak hour. That's quite a lot. That should accommodate the various residential options that we're talking about.
Okay. That's all. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Facey.
Thank you, Commissioner. We'll make those arrangements for Mr. Facey and Mr. Rossiter to have a discussion.
Well, as I say, I'm not directing the conference.
Yes.
I'm merely suggesting that it might be in your client's interests if Mr. Facey were to make contact in order that the benefits of that discussion might be reflected in the council's reply.
Ms. Costello. And she has prepared a summary of her evidence. She also filed a supplementary statement in regard to the NPS that's just come into effect. She will read her summary.
Good morning, Commissioners. My primary brief of evidence outlined my evidence in support of the relief sought by Willow Ridge in relation to the type and extent of zones which are proposed to make up the three parks area, including a new proposed Chapter 19B business zone, along with the features to be retained on the proposed structure plan for three parks. On the basis of the rebuttal evidence filed by Mr. Roberts for the council, including his accompanying plan handed up to the panel, subject to a correction of the extent of the commercial zone, I note there are now limited areas where we have not found agreement. Mr. Roberts supports the approach of a new Chapter 19B business zone within three parks. I consider the amendments suggested by Mr. Roberts to the zone drafting are appropriate, and I have reviewed the list of district-wide provisions, which I consider as complete. With respect to the spatial extent of the business zone, Mr. Roberts considers the low-density suburban residential zone as more appropriate to adjoin the Te Kura Otaki Karara primary school site on the basis of reverse sensitivity concerns. I do not share the same concern that the proposed business zone is inappropriately located adjacent to the school site, given the land uses are likely to be separated by a road, Road 17, and where the aspects of the school which adjoin this boundary are made up of vehicle entry, staff car parking, caretaker shed, and the edge of the playing fields. And I've just included figure one, the approved outline development plan for the school site. I note that the standards for fencing and setbacks for industrial or service activities, as recommended by Mr. Roberts, will provide adequate buffer between different land uses. It's also my experience that there is the potential for reverse sensitivity effects associated with school sites adjacent to residential development. I consider that the business zoning is an appropriate zone adjacent to the school site, and given the demand for business land supported by the economic evidence, I consider the extent of the business zoning as sought by the submission as appropriate. I support the introduction of high density and medium density residential zones in three parks, and the location of these zones as sought by the Willow Ridge submission. I consider in the context of the high density residential purpose and objectives referred to by Mr. Roberts that the Three Parks commercial zone fulfills the role of a town centre, providing amenities, services and employment. The high density residential zone Three Parks also have easy access to the Wanaka town centre. My supplementary evidence, 7th of August 2020, details the implications of the NPS Urban Development 2020 and the further support that I consider this policy statement gives to the location of these high and medium density zones within Three Parks. I remain of the opinion that the proposed alignment of the Western Fixed Road as sought within the Willow Ridge Relief is a preferable alignment of this key road connection into Three Parks for the reasons set out in my primary evidence, and I rely upon the evidence of Mr. Facey that a solution in terms of intersection control is able to be found in order to appropriately provide for this alignment. I also consider it appropriate to remove the building restriction area along the western golf course boundary and the notified visitor accommodation subzone in this area for the reasons set out in my primary brief of evidence.
Thank you. Lucky dip. Commissioner Munro, would you like to go first? Well, that's an easy answer. Commissioner Dawson?
No, I don't have any questions either, thank you.
Commissioner Smith?
Thank you. I'll make up for that. I have no other questions.
Don't feel the need, Commissioner.
I'll try to keep it to the point as much as possible. How do I put this? My primary interest in this is around the integrated planning outcomes that were sought by the Three Parks Special Zone, and looking at that zone, it was, I suppose, quite noble and visionary in terms of integrated planning. It provided the opportunity for, as described in its own purpose, to provide a real opportunity for integrated Three Parks, residential, recreational, commercial, business, living, and in an urban design context, that's, I suppose, a very noble cause and something I'm sure that we all hold in as a goal. What are the risks of, notwithstanding that we understand the challenges that there have been in administering the Three Parks zone, it was fairly complex, it was a little bit cumbersome. What do we risk throwing away in falling to generic zones in providing those outcomes?
Yeah, I've thought about this a bit since I heard you ask the same question of Mr. Roberts, and I think my thinking on this is that we now have a sort of extra suite of controls that come into play to achieve those kind of things that you're talking about, especially the integration and the design aspects. And they are made up of, firstly, the new subdivision design guideline that we have that sits beside the district plan. So any subdivision of any of these zones that gets considered gets looked at against that design guideline. Secondly would be the restricted discretionary matters for subdivision in the district plan, which have a level of discretion and assessment against those considerations. And then there's an actual specific, I didn't bring it with me, but in the subdivision section there's an additional matter of control for subdivision in Three Parks, which brings in a couple of those matters that you've been asking about, the road and road integration and design. So there's a level of process now that ensures that we have control and discretion and assessment over those concerns.
Do you think that council in recent history have had a good have provided good outcomes in terms of integrated design through that approach?
In my experience, I have been involved with providing a number of assessments, you know, against the subdivision design guideline. I guess I'm struggling to think of examples where there's been such a comprehensive site as we have here, where it's been applied to this extent, but certainly in examples of residential subdivision, the newer ones, yes, we have used the design, there has been use of the design guideline to achieve outcomes.
So in this case, we have the benefit that, I suppose the benefit that one party controls the majority of this land,
yes,
so that it has a vision around integrated, but in real terms, there's nothing stopping this ending up in a whole range of different ownerships. And, you know, would that complicate the delivery of integrated outcome?
No. I mean, it is a possibility that land gets divided up into different landowners, but I guess in my view, the structure plan that is proposed provides that base of the key aspects, and then subsequent subdivision gets assessed, like I said, through those processes, and ideally is integrated with whatever's come before or whatever exists and whatever can be seen to become in the future.
And to take this to a more specific level, if we're to look at Tim Wallace Drive specifically, the vision that I saw through the Three Park Special Zone was really to create a high street environment where, you know, the ground floors particularly were commercial, you know, the amount of glazing they had, the way they were set back from the road, the environment that they created, and all those sort of things.
Mm.
Does the business mixed use zone ensure that same outcome? Is such an integrated and specific outcome along Tim Wallace Drive?
There are measures in that zone intended to do so. The design guidelines specifically for business mixed use reference those design aspects and encourage those, in particular for buildings fronting streets, for example, those same aims.
So do we have an example, and admittedly that it is a relatively new outcome, do we have an example of the outcomes of the mixed business use zone in achieving that?
Possibly a couple of buildings I'm thinking along Gorge Road, but I couldn't be certain if they've been consented under the new BMU zoning or they were just under the previous business zone rules. So I can't think of anything specific that has been consented under business mixed use zone, no.
Thank you. You will have potentially heard some discussion to your paragraph 22, where you sort of identify that there was a bit of a gap in the zoning structure around the types of activities that, and you know, clearly that's resulted in the Three Parks business zone that's now proposed. Notwithstanding that there's no longer any general industrial zone, do you see proposed on your client's land, do you see a broader resolution to that problem? The interaction between the business mixed use zone, the proposed three parks business zone, and the general industrial zone proposed?
In terms of the spatial arrangement?
In terms of the provisions, in terms of the activities which they provide for?
So the suggestion that is in the submission is that this business zone will provide a appropriate middle ground.
Within the three parks site,
yes.
Do you see that having a broader role?
Yes. I think I actually mentioned that despite Council's concern about adding new zones, I saw that this zone may in fact be found useful in the future for Council, perhaps specifically the Frankton Flats area, when that comes up for review. It's the type of activity that perhaps I see there in the E2 zone, current ODP Franklin Flats E2. So, yes, there may be wider application of it.
Maybe broader. And is there potentially in Warnock, in Ballantyne Road, Gordon Road, other places, do you see a broader application of that zone?
Yes, possible. I think... Sorry, Anderson, did you say Anderson Road?
Sorry, I meant Ballantyne Road and, and Gordon Road. Thank you. High-density residential... is at the moment we have very limited high-density residential in Wanaka, and it's really just past the Wanaka Marina apartments is about it.
Yep.
And even through the proposed district plan, the bits of directly adjoining the Wanaka township, behind the Wanaka township, are only proposed to be medium density.
Yes.
So I'm just wondering whether in that context is high density actually a right fit in Wanaka, and is there actually an expression of it that we can point to, and particularly on this scale, because there is quite a bit of it proposed, that would support that idea?
So was your first question, is there any in Wanaka?
Well, is this an appropriate... If it's already been determined that medium density close to the town centre is the appropriate outcome, then what would support high density further away from the main town centre?
Sure.
Is there an example you can point to?
Well, like you say, there's no current examples in Wanaka apart from the Lakeside Road strip, which heads out along there. But in general, I think despite council's previous zoning of medium density around their current zone, it's important to look for opportunities where it's a appropriate place to locate high density, and I consider this as one for the reasons in my evidence, including flat developable land aspect, good sunlight, close to a centre, close to those planned public transport routes, reasonably easy access into the town centre, Wanaka town centre itself, and yes, my supplementary evidence went into the view that the national policy statement now directs councils to take advantage of those opportunities if they come up, to future-proof, to plan for this growth in the future.
And do you think that the balance of that is right, given that as I touched on before, the sheer capacity of the number of people that you can put into a high-density zone means you need less of it to provide the... you know, there is quite a large extent of high density zone compared to the medium density and the low density zone. Is the balance of that right?
Yes. In terms of the focus of providing for higher density growth where we can, then yes. I think that it's an appropriate location, like I said, close to the centre. There's limited other opportunity in Wanaka to provide for high density in a greenfield situation like this, and my view would be yes, the scale is appropriate.
Do you think that we've got the structure plan right in terms of the extent of the provisions that it enforces in terms of roading structures and other fixed reserves and things like that? Do you think there should be more detail or less detail in that to provide an integrated outcome?
I'm comfortable with the level of detail that's shown on the proposed structure plan by way of submission. Noting that while there are some identification of the larger reserve spaces, once again, that subdivision process, including the design guideline and the council's parks and reserves strategy, brings into play further local reserves or as appropriate to what gets developed at the time. So this is, in terms of, for example, open space, this is not going to be the final extent of what will happen in three parks. It sets the structure, I suppose, and yes, I do think it's appropriate.
Thank you.
think that's all for now. Thank you very much, and thanks for your assistance.
Rashley Hill. Thank you. Just a couple from me. Just one, a clarification, really going to the site that you recommend be rezoned from the low density, I think it's low density or medium density, to the business, the one adjacent to the school.
Yes.
Can you just clarify for me, because I'm not so familiar, Deering Street, you think, is that, it's currently formed on the opposite side of Tim Wallace, is it likely to be extended across the road, is that what you're saying?
Yes, that's an assumption. It's called Road 17, and the documents, for example, are around the notice of requirement for the school and the ODP for the school. I don't know whether exactly it will be called Deering Street in the future or a different name, but...
So if it is, your argument is that this site will then be separated from the school by a road, if that's correct?
It's likely
not,
to.
I think you're referring to the setbacks and the fencing requirements that Mr. Roberts has suggested, which I'm just looking quickly at this, would be the 7 metres. If there wasn't a road, it would be the 7 metres?
Correct, and 3 metres from a road.
Right, and
yes.
And the fencing is the 2 metres. So your
yes.
argument is that's sufficient. That's fine. And also the gym site is also adjacent to the school.
Yes,
which,
it is.
Which Mr. Roberts has recommended be rezoned to business mixed use.
Yes.
And can I just confirm, when you business zone, you're meaning that the three parks business zone for this, the residential site there?
Yes.
Thank you very much.
Yes.
And just on a theme, I know Mr. Roberts will get to have an opportunity. Have you had a phone conversation with him about this evidence?
No, I haven't.
I just wondered whether you think that's useful or not again.
Yes.
Because he'll have a reply and you may be able to persuade him.
Yes.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
And that was going to be my, because I know that you said in your brief you just gave us a note, there are now limited areas where we have not found agreement.
Yes.
What are the areas, and would it be the benefit of a conversation? But what are areas of disagreement?
The areas which I've summarised following from that paragraph. So.
And would it be the benefit of the contact person?
Yes, certainly.
One question after that is that hasn't already been covered. Thank you for suggesting a direct safe link from the sports fields to essentially the Wanaka Recreation
yes.
Centre in the school. Is putting including the one between the Wanaka Rec Centre and 101 Ballantyne Road, is that sufficient in policy 2273154 I'm just wondering.
Yes, I considered other options for that, for how to execute that that intent, and I landed on that policy being appropriate.
Is there anything else that you can think of when you were going through it? Were there any?
It's possibly something that you may indicate on a structure plan. However, the reason I didn't take that approach was basically the uncertainty of that alignment, and it will depend on how that land is subdivided between those two areas. There's always a risk that you put a line on a structure plan and it becomes sort of a fixed thing and may become difficult later on when that subdivision pattern doesn't exactly line up with the fixed structure plan. So,
And I get that, but mm-hmm. if you look at the submission in front of us, there were several road networks that were outlined and they changed quite dramatically. I was just
yes.
just trying, because I would consider that particular little connection, you've identified it as important. I'd
yep.
probably upgrade that to vital.
Sure.
Because it's quite a, yep. and just how we go about
yep.
best, and I think we both want
yep.
to achieve it. It's just how best to achieve
agree.
It.
Agree, yes.
And then that goes to the wider, and again, thank you for noting the NOF and the cycling network. The connection on the proposed new intersection and along the golf course, are there opportunities there for securing safer cycling networks? Or has that been something that you turned your mind to? And if so, could you...
The location is at the golf course intersection?
From the golf course road intersection along that road?
Along the
proposed
yeah.
connection? Because that is essentially, that'll be utilised as a cycling,
yep.
active travel.
Yes.
I can imagine school kids
yes.
going to the rec centre, going
yep.
to school.
Yes, ideally that road would have provision for cycling. I also note that the original intent of the building restriction area, which follows up the side of the golf course, was for pedestrian cycle link,
yep.
And that's provided for by the structure plan as proposed with an open space corridor still provided there.
And I see that that continues up the golf course.
Yes.
And that's obviously you're then heading into another person's site.
That's right. So ideally that links into the underpass eventually and provides connection north-south, I guess, a little
yes.
bit.
So that's a goal that we're all swimming towards?
Yes, and I think the structure plan provides for that, yep, with retaining the open space small corridor along that boundary.
And that would be, in your mind, is more of an off-route or is it still an on-route cycling?
It could be either. I'm noting that, depending on the interface between the golf course and the high density, either could be provided.
And just for clarity, we are dealing with internally in the three parks area, a 40-kilometre maximum speed limit. Is that there? My understanding, or is there a difference on Sir Tim Wallace Drive? And I probably should have asked the road professional. I apologise for putting you on the spot.
I'm not certain of that. Was the answer to that? But it's
I'm seeing a nod from behind, okay. So I'll take that.
Yeah.
Thank you.
One question from me, Ms. Costello, that relates to paragraph 7 of your supplementary evidence. You said, with the NPSUD, provisional it's no longer necessary to adopt strict interpretation of the PDP reference to HDR zoning. I've talked to Mr. Grierson about the interpretation of that NPS provision already, so I won't go over that. But the question I have for you is, does that create an issue of internal inconsistency as between the strategic direction of the plan as to where HDR goes when the ink is only just dry on the consent orders from the court and what you were saying we should provide for?
Quite possibly. I did note, just looked at this last night, but the wording in the high density zone where it refers to town centres is in lowercase. The wording in the strategic chapter is, when it says town centres, is uppercase and it has a footnote which specifically says, defined by the extent of the Queenstown and Wanaka town centre zones. So there's a difference there between those chapters already. And I think it supports my position because my reading of the high density purpose and objectives is that a centre, or these principles around putting residential and more density around centres, I think equally applies to the Three Park Centre. And that then is supported by the policy below, what I've just referred to in the strategic directions chapter, which brings in three parks as a centre. Sorry, I didn't bring the reference to those.
So I didn't quite follow
yeah,
that.
Yeah.
So where is which policies have a different town centre? Which is in higher case, which is in lower case?
The strategic directions chapter, it has uppercase, town centres, and a footnote explaining that policy is talking about the Queenstown Town Centre and the Wanaka Town Centre as defined by the extent of those zones.
Which wouldn't include three parks.
No. That's right, but the high density zone asks us to locate density around town centres, which is in lowercase, and I don't consider needs a strict interpretation of that. In saying that, I also consider that the high density in three parks is within reasonable walking distance to the Wanaka Town Centre. So either way, not much hangs on that.
Thank you, Ms. Costello.
appreciate your input. Ms. Devlin?
Yes, so that concludes the first submission. She'll just answer any questions in relation to her evidence.
Well, I did have one just point of clarification in relation to the piece of land that I talk about in section 16 to 18. And there's a strip of land owned by QODC between that land, which is, you know, part of the three parks parcel, and the Willow Ridge land to the south of that. So that QODC strip is part of the ponds site, and it's part of that same title, and it was there for a pipeline. Initially, that's why it's only 3.5 metres. But in reality, the pipeline is located at the three parks boundary rather than within that strip, and it's there by an easement on that location. So that strip is still part of the QODC land and acquired through the Public Works Act, but it actually serves no purpose. So in the future, you know, we'd have discussions with QODC about whether they need to keep that land once they've dealt with the public works issue on the pond site.
So your point is that it wasn't designed to be accessed to future
Correct.
Sports field, it was designed for a completely different purpose.
Yeah, and my point is it's probably unnecessary.
Mr. Hill, any questions?
I don't have any questions, just no follow-up with Mr. Place about his views not to include it. Where are we at?
I noticed he didn't rebut my evidence, so we're pretty much my response to him, and I haven't had any follow-up with him.
Nothing more, thank you. I understand the issue.
Commissioner McLeod?
Yep, thank you, Mr. Devlin. The just a general question about this piece of land. It seems to make logical sense. And I'm just wanting to get clear in my mind that we're not precluding any options, because I'm underaware that there's been a lot of discussion over many years about the Riverbank Road intersection. And the intersection, which is into Riverbank Ballantyne,
yes.
has proved fairly curly at best. And there was some discussion about potentially putting an extension of that Riverbank Road round the top of the contour, which is, if you look at your evidence, point 13 has got the photo.
Yeah.
So it's roughly, if you roughly looked at the top of that red triangle at the bottom there,
mm-hmm.
about potentially a road access along, is that still something that Willow Ridge are thinking about, or is that?
It's something that just we had when we were working on plan change 36 and 46 for the Ballantyne Ridge industrial area. We did look at a connection through there, but it wasn't something that council particularly picked up on, because there is the issue that the road is constructed outside of the road corridor down there at that junction, which was an added, so we thought that would give council the opportunity to tidy that all up, and it's something that, you know, we could work with council on. But as I say, there's not been any appetite from council for the bridge. This doesn't necessarily preclude that, because there is that level change. So what happens on that red triangle will not necessarily read as part of the wider, you know, it might be a standalone kind of industrial activity that reads more with the what's happening down there with the yard. And
it's just this goes to the discussion and the evidence from the traffic expert about intersection, you know, an offset intersection is much safer than a direct intersection, and this intersection is problematic.
It is problematic.
As long as we're not precluding that by
somehow
cause and effect.
No.
And as to the appetite of council, well, there you go. The next little, and this is probably just to that little 3.5 metre strip,
mm-hmm.
You said it's unlikely to be required as a pedestrian walkway. Why do you say that?
Because of the where it's serving, as in within three parks, we've provided a lot of pedestrian linkages and walkways around the entire site. So people using the ponds site as a future recreation sports ground can access through three parks. There's not a lot of residential areas that are being served from Riverbank Road. So my point was that there's not going to be a high concentration of people wanting to use that, where there's other linkages provided all over within three parks and down towards the other side, the western side of Ballantyne Road, that's all provided for through different developments.
And so there'll be other pedestrian access?
Yeah, and it doesn't mean that there won't be pedestrian access between Riverbank Road and the pond site, it just is that I'm saying that's not necessarily.
And last question, as you've done some analysis of the general industrial zone, and this obviously by this application, by definition, says that this is an appropriate spot for it. Have you turned your mind to any other appropriate spots, or have you concentrated solely within the three parks?
For general industrial, other than what was proposed to be zoned in the PDP, I haven't considered any greenfield sites that haven't been zoned. I certainly support GIZ on the western side of Ballantyne Road with some amendments to the GIZ to enable more activities, but I'm quite comfortable with having a GIZ zone, and I think that although there are existing activities that don't fit into the notified GIZ zone, with amendments to that, then that western side of Ballantyne Road is an area that, so Ballantyne Industrial, sort of Gordon Road down, in my view, was always a suitable industrial zone rather than, for example, business mixed use.
Thank you.
Mr. Evelyn, I just wanted to ask you about paragraph 17 of your evidence. You suggest you're looking at the current residential zone of the orange.
Yep.
I'm not sure how you describe that shape, because it's not a rectangle. You said that residential subdivision would be constrained by the dimensions of the site and reverse sensitivity effects of the JIS. The question I had is that my understanding is that area is half a hectare, which would seem to give a fair bit of scope for residential design, and you'd be able to use the council land as a buffer in practice.
Yeah, you could do something. We just felt it was a neater outcome to bring the boundary up, because then you can, because it does, it's a slightly narrower point at the top there. So you could concentrate your industrial and then not have a slightly awkward, you'd have to get your residential in. And we've always seen a connection through between the residential and the industrial. So once you've got the road in there trying to fit the residential, we just felt that we could do more with it being industrial land. And then have that sort of, I suppose, neater boundary of the residential, and you can still 3.5. You can still create some kind of buffer.
And I suppose the question, this goes back to the questions that Commissioner Smith was asking Mr. Facey, that of course there is no road on the structure plan through there. We're talking about possibilities.
Yeah, but in my view, the roads in the structure plan, so they're fixed roads, but it doesn't preclude other roads. It never has. So we can, those are the roads that need to be there, but it doesn't mean that you can't have other roads. So.
I'm certainly not saying that those are the only roads, but yep. There's no certainty there will be a road.
Well, there's no certainty, but again, the existing rules have required us to produce a master plan, an outline development plan, which we have done for the entire site. So that's a fairly good guideline of what our intentions for development are, and that does show a number of road linkages. And you know, at this stage, we don't intend to deviate too far from what we show. But over time, things will change slightly. But you know, there's certainly a road network, and a lot of the roads we've started to build a number of roads coming off Sir Tim Wallace Drive, and that guides other roads within the site as well.
Thank you. Commissioner Monroe?
No, thank you.
Commissioner Dawson?
No, thank you.
Commissioner Smith?
Yeah, thank you. I'll be brief. In your current master plan, for want of a better term, do you plan to send that road along the boundary of the active recreation zone, or I suppose a row of development back from that?
I think the current one, it is low density residential, so it and at that stage this was going to be a business park type, so we haven't based that on recreation sports ground, which you know we're very supportive of the sports grounds, and we're proposing a medium density residential which we would then integrate with the sports grounds a bit better and have it so we would we haven't I suppose the answer is we haven't got a detailed design out, and that is an area that we will relook at using the sports grounds as an opportunity to work with the medium density residential.
On the notified structure plan, I think that there were still the circles on the roads without the notation in the legend as to what those circles meant around those intersection locations. Is it your view they have any significance as circles without any notation?
Well, I suppose that's it. I mean, I think what they're supposed to be is fixed connection points plus or minus 50 metres.
20 metres, I think.
20,
yeah,
something like that. Yeah, but...
So, just regard to this proposed general industrial area, I suppose we have the benefit that it doesn't largely adjoin residential activities, which is, you know, could be seen as a benefit. But we do adjoin both a transport corridor, being Riverbank Road, and we do and Valentine Road, and also what is proposed to be active recreation zone. Is there anything we should be considering in terms of buffers or mitigation, both in terms of the industrial activity on those things, but also reverse sensitivity the other way? And we've discussed with some of the parties around, I suppose, the potential interaction between community activities on the recreation land, and you know, we've had maternity wards, maternity hubs suggested. We've had discussions around sports clubs, youth clubs, Alpine Research and Development Centre, things like that. Is there any concern you have with the interaction of those with the industrial?
I think, well, you can see from figure one that there's already development within that proposed industrial zone. There's actually an application before council to extend that further along that boundary with the ponds. So that's established basically a solid wall boundary backing onto there. There's the existing planting, which is partly on both sites, and the intention is that will remain as a screening. The industrial development will face inwards, and I think by the time the next building is built, it'll be very, you know, that will be half that boundary already taken up. So I think that those concrete walls up to the boundary, I mean, they may not look attractive, but the trees will help with that. But that will internalise the industrial effects somewhat.
And Riverbank Road, do you think there's need for screen planting or mounding or buffering along that road to mitigate the impacts of the industrial?
I think some planting setback would be appropriate, but you're certainly coming into industrial type of activity already, and I believe there is planting already down there. But yeah, I don't think you're going to hide the fact it's an industrial zone and the industrial buildings there, and by their nature, you know, they'll be reasonably large scale, but some sort of screen planting to soften that is probably something that will be done anyway, regardless of rules, just as a good design outcome.
Yeah. Cool. All right, thank you.
Thank you very much, Ms. Gibbon. Thank you, Mr. Gresson.
Thank you.
You and your team. The Scope Resources team will have a 5-minute break. We'll start at